Greetings, listeners. Welcome to The Accidental Farmer, a podcast that gives you the real dirt on farming. We're really excited because this is our first episode and we're going to be talking about farming. Specifically, we're going to be talking about the telephone farmer, the farmer who does not live where he farms. And today, I am privileged and honored to have our guest. I'm going to introduce him. I am thrilled to introduce Peter Muthee Mwangi, a seasoned agribusiness expert with over 25 years of hands-on experience in transforming farming ventures across Africa. As the founder of Pemu Agri-Food Academy, Peter specializes in equipping small and medium-sized farms with the tools and strategies they may need to thrive. From professional farm management to market access and regenerative farming practices. Peter's unique insight into the challenges faced by telephone farmers stems from his leadership of the Telephone Farmers Project at Latia, where he gained first-hand understanding of the triumphs and tribulations of individuals balancing urban careers with rural farming investments. His experience has made him a trusted authority on why many of these ventures falter and what it takes to create sustainable, profitable agribusiness. Beyond his work with Pemu, Peter is a champion of system-wide change in food systems. Recognized as an Active Food Systems Fellow by the Rockefeller Foundation and Acumen, he has played pivotal roles in developing inclusive agribusiness models, coaching agribusiness leaders, and driving innovation and sustainability in farming practices. His leadership extends to initiatives with CGIAR, Food Systems Accelerator, and FarmWorks, reflecting his dedication to creating resilient food systems that benefit farmers, consumers, and the planet. Join us as Peter shares his expertise on overcoming the pitfalls of accidental farming, crafting viable agribusinesses, and reshaping the future of food systems in Africa. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah.
I almost couldn't recognize myself when you're describing me, but yeah. Thank you. I'm Peter Muthee. I am a farmer, a trader in vegetables, and also a trainer and a teacher. I don't know whether you want me to say a little bit about myself.
Yeah, tell us a bit about your journey in agriculture.
Okay.
What inspired you and how did you get to where you are today?
Okay.
Yeah.
So people ask, how did you get into it? I was always in agriculture.
Okay.
When I was growing up, I think that was the only thing that I was interested in. Mm-hmm. And some people used to joke that I was born in a basket, in a vegetable basket, because I've always been around vegetables, fruits. I've always been agriculture. Even when I was growing up in primary school, in high school, in the university, there was never any doubt in my mind what I would end up doing. Okay. So I studied agriculture at the university.
Okay.
And for many years, I worked with many companies, started with Homegrown way back in the 97. 98.
I know Homegrown. I did some work with them as well.
Yeah. So that was my first employer in agriculture.
Okay.
And also where I gained most of my learning and most of my training.
Yes.
Really hands-on training. They had a fantastic training program.
Okay.
No wonder most of the agribusiness leaders today in this country and in this region all seem to have come from one company. That was Homegrown. So I've worked between 97 and 2019. I worked for many companies, mainly in farms, also in food, in factories. I did farming itself, production.
Mm-hmm.
I did our grower programs. I worked for food processing. And during this period, I didn't just work for private companies. I also worked for NGOs.
Okay.
So I could be able to balance both the development as well as commercial aspects.
Yes.
And I also, in this period, set up a school, which I'm still proud of. Most people know me because of my involvement with Latia Agribusiness Solution, which is a school, a vocational training center, one of the first to introduce agricultural TVET in Kenya. Actually, it was the first registered TVET after the new rules were introduced.
After the new, reconstituted, after, or yeah,
the new rules TVET. Were introduced.
Okay.
So it's a very well-known TVET. So between, up to 2019, I was working as an employee for many companies. My last employment was with Centum, where I was the head of agriculture, running a company called Greenblade, where we were exporting herbs. But then in 2020, a friend of mine and I started a company called Farmworks. Again, a lot of people now know me because of my background in Farmworks. Farmworks currently is one of the largest distributors of fresh produce in Nairobi.
Okay.
We distribute tomatoes, we distribute onions, we are a wholesaler. We run about 36 wholesale outlets. And not just in Nairobi, but we also distribute vegetables in Kisumu and other cities in Kenya.
Okay.
And we buy everything from smallholder farmers, even though we do our own farming also.
Okay.
And last year, my passion for training, my passion for involving myself with the mentorship and training really pushed me to start a new company, a new startup called Pemu Agri-Food Academy. So I'm back to training. And I forgot to say that actually I trained as a teacher at the university.
I was trained as a teacher. What is this love for training or education?
I actually, my degree was in agricultural education and extension.
Okay.
So actually I trained as a teacher and actually taught for a few months.
Okay.
So started as a teacher and now probably winding up my career again in teaching with Pemu Agri-Food Academy.
Yes.
Where basically we are looking at working much more deeply with the mid-sized farms, with small and mid-sized farms who are entrepreneurial and who are commercially minded.
Yeah. So you have a very wide range of experience in the whole value chain in agriculture. You've been a producer, you've worked both for NGOs and the private sector. I think you mentioned something about you worked for processors as well, food processors.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned to me earlier or aside that you had been involved in trading and things like that.
Yeah.
But is there one defining moment in your life that made you say that I want to commit to agriculture? I know you said you were born into it and it's something that you grew up with. But is there at one point you said, this is the thing that I'm going to do?
I don't think there is a particular one.
Yeah.
But the love for growing stuff, the love for vegetables especially and fruits, have been with me for long.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I said, I don't think there is a particular time, but all along, even my siblings and all knew this guy will only end up as a farmer or the next thing would have been a chef maybe.
Okay. But the rest of your family, is anyone else as passionate or as involved in agriculture as you are?
No, not really. I have a brother who is a top gardener, a really professional gardener.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say interested in food like I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So your journey is very inspiring. And now that you've had a front seat in agriculture for such a long time, let's talk about the state of agriculture in Kenya today. I would like us to take like a macro view of agriculture. And I'll start, what is the state of agriculture generally? What would you say is, happening?
Yeah, I can talk about Kenya. By the way, in my working career, I worked in Kenya mostly, but I also have experience in a couple of other African countries.
Okay.
So I know that.
So maybe in Kenya, what is the state as pertains to farmers, especially smallholder farmers? Yeah.
Agriculture in Kenya, especially smallholder farmer, agriculture is on the decline. And it's been declining for the last couple of years, 20 years or something like that. But the last couple of years has been very bad.
Okay. So it has been gradual and now it's been gradual.
I give you an example.
Yeah.
Growing up in the 80s and all, we could easily make 35 bags of maize per acre.
Yeah.
And today, what's the national average? 8, 12 bags maybe?
That's a third per acre. Yeah.
So yield has been declining across Kenya.
Yeah.
And incomes of smallholder farmers have been declining.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost textiles like that used to be big employers and big that used to engage a lot of smallholder farmers, like the French beans.
Yes.
So the French bean sector has been going down.
Yes.
To the point where this year we thought we probably have only a few years left, and we will shut it down. But it used to employ millions of, or maybe not millions, but thousands of smallholder farmers. Yes. And they would earn their living like that. So it's on a decline because of many reasons. Some of it is due to climate change. Some of it is because of macroeconomic, political interventions. Yes. But it is actually on a decline and a significant one.
Okay. So, you know, that's a bit sad to know. When I started farming many years ago, so I've had two forays into farming.
Mm.
The first time I did farming, one of the things I was involved in was French beans. And actually, that is how I got to interact with homegrown.
Yeah.
I was an outgrower for homegrown. And at that time, they provided a lot of support.
Yeah.
In fact, if it wasn't for homegrown, I don't think I would have grown any French beans.
Yeah.
So it is sad for me to hear that 30 years or 25 years on,
yeah,
French beans, which was a big earner of foreign exchange,
yeah,
you're saying might not exist in Kenya in the next few years. We are no longer competitive.
No.
Is the government doing anything in terms, from what you know, in terms of policies or any interventions to mitigate or to stem this tide? Yeah.
One of the reasons why our French bean and vegetable sector for export that used to employ these thousands of farmers, one of the reasons why it's dying is because of competition from countries where governments are much more involved.
Okay.
Yeah, you have examples of Rwanda where the government is very deliberate on pushing the sector,
mm-hmm,
Morocco, Egypt. Government involvement is important. In Kenya, we see none.
Okay.
And therefore, actually in Kenya, especially the last couple of years, the government seems to be much more keen on increasing levies, taxes. Yeah. It's made Kenya much more uncompetitive. We used to be a high-cost production country.
Mm-hmm.
We are now even higher costs, and other people are doing much more to promote these sectors. So not much government involvement in supporting this industry.
You know, that's somewhat unfortunate because in my understanding, there are about 9 pending agricultural bills. And some of them are going to have quite a big impact on agriculture in Kenya if they're passed. I think you're aware of some of them.
Yeah,
and
fully aware.
Are we then, are those enough regulations or is enough? Do we have too much regulation, not enough regulation, or is it adequate? Because 9 new bills?
If you look at most of the regulations that are coming up, it's either to increase some charges, some taxes, some levies, or to stop something or to control something.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the farmer who is going to bear the brunt of the whole of this is never involved really.
No.
So calling a few farmers in a workshop and saying you did a public participation, the farmers who are actually going to be the ones who suffer the consequences of all these new regulations are not involved.
Yeah.
And surprising for me is that if you look at other places, I keep mentioning Rwanda.
Yes.
It's on the other way around, is that the government is actually looking at pushing the French bean sector to become much more competitive. Just to give you an example, their freight costs is much lower than Kenyan freight costs. Beans coming out of Rwanda to Europe are up to 1.5 euros cheaper per box than our Kenyan beans.
And going to the same destination.
Going to the same destination.
Oh, okay.
And so there is a lot of work, that positive work being done in other places.
Yes.
And unfortunately, here it's either neutral or negative work that is being done with the regulations.
And some of these countries probably learned from us. Eh?
Of course, because we were the leader.
Yes, yes.
We were the leader. Now we are we are never going to achieve that status of a leader again.
That's possible?
No chance.
Okay.
For us in the industry, we know we'll never get back to that level, but at least we should be allowed to continue. But
to be competitive.
To
at
be
least.
Competitive. Yeah.
Because these are livelihoods we're talking about.
Yeah,
eh?
Yeah.
We're talking about people's earnings.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. So what do you think the biggest challenges facing farmers in Kenya are today? I'll ask this question differently. I got into farming by accident. Hence, I call myself the accidental farmer. I did what many Kenyans, at least from my peers, do. We have a bit of disposable income. We have some land somewhere and say, farming looks like an easy way to make money. The crop cycle for many vegetables is 3 to 4 months. You know, the story we're sold is that everybody has to eat, so everybody has to buy food.
Yeah.
So we say, how long does it take to grow tomatoes? 4 months. How much will an acre produce, yield? So we jump into farming. Little do we know that many of us just fail and fail miserably. When I talk to my friends or people who I know have dabbled in farming, some of them are even ashamed at how much money they have lost. And we keep putting in this money and nothing comes out. So why do so many of us fail? And what is it, because of the challenges we face? Is it because of the approach we take? What is the challenge? What is the problem?
I think you want us to talk about the telephone farmer, because there are many groups of farmers in Kenya
who are successful.
And there is a smallholder farmer who grows for their sustenance and sell the surpluses. Yes. They are the commercial farmers who are successful and continue being successful.
Yeah. I'm talking about the telephone farmer, the farmer who is not present at the location in which they are farming.
Yeah. So this is a very unique phenomenon called the telephone farmer, which I have a lot of experience now with.
Yes.
Started interacting with them in a project that we did with a couple of universities led by a Maastricht School of Management, where I was the project manager at Latia. And we did a study for 3 years, interacting with telephone farmers. I think we interviewed for the entire period, about 56 of them, following them through the whole period, trying to see what makes them work, what makes them successful, what makes them fail. And trying to figure out how could we unlock their potential. The reason why the founder of this project, the Dutch embassy, was interested in the telephone farmer is because it is one of the fastest growing segment of farmers, not just in Kenya, but across Africa.
Okay.
More and more urban-based elite.
Okay.
People with resources are investing in farming.
Yes.
And they do it on the telephone. That's why
the term telephone farming. Yes.
So they set up a farm in their village, like for example in Muranga, and then I employ a team and I try to manage the farm while I'm still working in the city.
Yes.
Number one of the reasons why they can't move straight away into the farm is because the farm is not big enough to be able to sustain their lifestyle.
Their lifestyle.
And of course, everybody wants a side hustle.
Yes.
They want to have a side business that eventually will grow into something that can also become a second income as well as a retirement plan. But what did we see? We found that the bulk of telephone farmers fail. Eventually they fail. The majority of them, they don't succeed. It's not so surprising because most new businesses fail though, but telephone farming has a lot of passion. There's even when people fail, they keep coming back. There is so much attachment to the land.
Yes.
As you said yourself, you've probably failed 3-4 times and went back.
Yes.
And you're still trying to do
Maybe in 1 year.
Maybe in 1 year. Yeah. But the biggest challenge for telephone farmers, of course, is the fact that they are not present. Running the business.
Yes.
So the biggest challenge is they are not present.
Yeah.
And this country doesn't have enough skilled people with the right mindset to be able to manage the farms on behalf of the telephone farmers who I consider investors. So there is a major challenge of lacking people who could actually run the farm on your behalf.
Yes.
And so you invest, but the people who you are trusting with your resources are not able to run the business. So that's a big challenge.
Yeah.
The market, many and those telephone farmers we found successful were the ones who could find, even after a lot of trial and error, who could find a product market fit, those who could find a market for what they were growing, a sustainable market.
Yeah.
A lot of the others that we found were not able to find a market.
Okay.
They were not able to grow for the market.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then of course, the fact that cost is high, And the fact that generally the whole agriculture is not doing well.
Yes. Oh, so generally, yeah?
Generally, okay. The whole agriculture is not doing well.
So, it's so a even declining if you're a
telephone, yeah. So if it's a very difficult environment to work in.
Yeah.
So if you are a telephone farmer and you're also operating in a market that fluctuates so much,
yes,
and you are relying on people to grow stuff for you or to manage your farm for you,
yes,
and you are not able to put in the time, it's much more difficult.
Okay. So from what I hear, you think that we also have unrealistic expectations in terms of when we're telephone farming. Do you think that could be a problem as well?
Yes.
That we think that this is something where we can, you know,
yes,
run it from a distance, don't have minimal involvement, because some of the investments that we hear are quite substantial.
Yes.
We put in a lot of money, but I like what you said. Sometimes we put in the kind of input we put in monetarily or the financial investment might not match with the expertise that we then hire to run the farms for us. Is that a problem?
False expectations was a big factor that we saw.
Yes.
Many businesses succeed when the founder or the investor knows something about that business.
Okay.
Many people getting into telephone farming knows nothing. They know nothing about farming.
Yeah.
They don't know anything about the value chains. They don't know anything about what they are getting into. And a lot of them don't take the time to learn and to understand what they are getting into.
Yes.
And there is a lot of, in the social media platforms, it's very easy to get carried away and to see how somebody planted 3 acres of tomatoes and he was a millionaire.
Yeah.
And, but usually those kind of stories don't give you the other side of it, what it takes to continue sustaining such a performance. So false expectation is a big one.
Okay.
And the fact that, because you don't know this industry and you mentioned about the amount of money invested, during the time when we were doing the telephone farmer survey, we were shocked by how much money people invest.
Yeah.
I encourage you to read the report. I posted it on LinkedIn the other day.
We'll share it on
read
the,
it. You'll
we'll
be
share
shocked.
It on our,
and seconds. If you don't find that part where the average investment, I can give you more details on that.
Yes.
But it was amazing. We found farms where people have invested millions, 30, 40 million shillings on a farm and which collapses maybe in the next 2 to 3 years. Because the investment was driven by what you call spreadsheets numbers.
Yes, so projections, forecasts. Yeah, we get excited. You know,
so you get a consultant. Yeah. He prepares for you a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
You look at it.
Yeah.
Usually, it doesn't have the scenarios.
Yeah,
it doesn't tell you worst case scenario, low case, high case.
Doesn't
it's just
you,
a good case.
Yeah, and they don't tell you the hazards. What the pitfalls.
Risks,
yes,
the risks that could be involved.
I've been a victim of that. Yeah.
So. And it's also not surprising that when in our study, bankers will not like me for saying this, but we found that there were more, as a category of elite or executives or professionals, the bankers were the majority of people who invested in telephone farming. It's probably the thinking that we know how to manage money.
Yes.
But it's very different from managing money to managing the markets.
Yes.
Farming is very complex. It's a 24/7.
Yeah.
There is no break. Yeah. It's 24/7. Every day, every hour, there is no break. Crops don't know Christmas.
Yeah.
Animals don't know whether there's a holiday. Markets don't care. They need their products every day. So it's people have to think fast. How much time do I have to invest in this?
And I also find that farming is also, like most entrepreneurial journeys, but so much so with farming, it's very lonely. You find that you carry all the burden to yourself. You know, when you lose a crop, you feel very alone. You know, no matter what people tell you, oh, things will get better. I think we suffer in silence, really. Yeah.
It's a telephone farmer who gets very lonely because usually there is... again, you are usually alone. It's probably the only business where money doesn't guarantee success. So I don't think other businesses too. You can just pump in money and think
that
you'll
one
succeed.
Day, yeah.
You've seen how many startups have also gone bust.
Yes, yeah.
It's not just money. It's just you don't just put money and expect things will work.
Yeah.
there is a lot of work to do with finding the right team for yourself, building up a rapport with the team, the community around you, the market, the suppliers, the transporters. It's a lot of work that is involved that makes work. So if you just invest 5 million shillings on a farm, and you expect that 5 million shillings, because you've put enough money,
will
guarantee success, it's highly likely that you could also lose it.
And that is a cycle that we see repeated over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Do you think the government and the private sectors can step up to help farmers overcome some of these challenges? You know, you know, the lack of expertise you've mentioned, the unrealistic expectations, the lack of preparedness. We don't really understand the complexities of farming.
Yeah, because where will farmers find this knowledge?
That's the question.
Where will farmers find this knowledge about markets, knowledge about crops, knowledge about soil? Where will they find it? We in Kenya, we have our extension services are long, long gone. Yeah. They don't exist.
Yeah.
So their government would have a role if we had, for example, centers of excellence.
Because there was extension services in the past.
Yes. Because if you are a telephone farmer and you walk into the Ministry of Agriculture today in Kinangop or in another village, and you say, I want to set up a 30-acre farm here, you won't find anyone really there who can actually guide you on doing that. Private sector is doing it, and you can see, and I'm very happy about all the platforms that I'm seeing led by young people who are changing the way we think about farming. And there are many platforms now where you can actually find some advice.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the challenge is that real business experience is needed.
Yes.
And telephone farmers can't find a place where they can go for advice. One of the things we were hoping to do with the Telephone Farmer Project was, in the end, design a kind of an ecosystem, a kind of a one-stop shop where a telephone farmer can go and they can find information about investments. They can be guided on investment. They can be guided on people, because it's about people.
Yes.
How do you find the right people? How do you motivate the people? How do you remunerate them? How do you keep them? How do you work with the markets? How do you find suppliers? How do you make sure that when you are a vegetable farmer, somebody doesn't sell you a flower greenhouse?
That's right.
Because it's just a greenhouse you buy. And a flower greenhouse and a tomato greenhouse are different.
Yeah.
But as a farmer, you may not know this. So the private sector also can play a role.
Yeah.
And I know that some kind of centers of excellence, some kind of providers, one-stop shops, farmer service centers are being developed.
That's very encouraging to hear, because, you know, you said that the telephone farmers, many of them constitute the elite or the middle class.
Yeah.
So they're already successful in their own right in other areas.
Yeah.
But it's this not fully understanding the complexities of farming or underestimating how difficult farming can be that makes them fail. Mm. But you mentioned something earlier that there is a bright side in the sense that I think you said that they are successful telephone farmers. Which I didn't think they were.
They
are successful telephone farmers. What makes them, what makes a successful telephone farmer?
Yeah. You may not have seen them, but I have much more interaction with telephone farmers, much more deeper, many more telephone farmers in Kenya and East Africa. And yeah, they are very successful telephone farmers, of course.
Yeah.
The thing is, what we saw also during the study is that the success rate of a telephone farmer depended also on the amount of time that the telephone farmer was spending on the project.
Okay, so the more time,
the higher the project success. And it wasn't just because they were managing, but it was because they were able to build a team.
Okay.
And they were able to interact and to build the team better. They still needed a team, they still needed a farm operators, but they got more integrated into the farm community and the outside community. Also, we found that telephone farmers who were growing a crop were part of a value chain or supply chain. And for example, they were growing crops on contract, so market wasn't an issue.
Yes.
And they had good buyers, and they had a good relationship with their buyers, formal markets. We found that telephone farmers there were also successful. We also found that the more they go into the market, not just growing their own product, the more they went into the market, the higher up they went into the market. The telephone farmers who got into farming, distribution, maybe farming, value addition, and distribution themselves.
Yes.
So they grew the product.
Okay.
They processed it and they sold it. The more they were able to get higher up in the market.
Yeah. So the more the value chain they controlled. Yeah. The bigger, the more profitable it was.
Okay. So we found that those ones who are fully integrated, vertically integrated,
yes,
were actually more successful than those who depended on other value chain players.
Yeah. Okay.
And but also marketing is a key thing because we saw that a lot of farmers who have a good idea what the market wants.
Yes.
And they were not just making this mistake that we all make. Make a product and then find a market for it. But they were actually doing, find what the market wants and make that product.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So they are successful telephone farmers.
Yeah.
After this, I'll show you a few.
Okay. Very good. And they can be successful regardless of the crop. So you've seen successful telephone farmers in tomatoes, onions,
Chicken,
and even livestock as well. Yeah, livestock. So it doesn't depend so much, you know, because many people say, oh, if you're going to be successful in farming, grow X or grow Y or keep this kind of, you know, grow keep goats or keep sheep. No, it's the practices that are more important.
And actually, one of the other factors I forgot to say was the passion. Those who are connected so much with what they were doing.
Yes.
So some who love animals so much and they kept dairy. And they were not, and also consistency, because the other thing we saw is that usually the first 3-4 years are so tough.
Yeah.
So the ones that really succeeded, you're probably finding them in their fifth year.
Yeah. So it's a long game, eh?
It's a long game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Contrary to what we think. Eh?
Consistency. Yeah. It's not you can't get rich quick.
Yeah.
If that's what you're looking for, don't do telephone farming.
That's what many of us thought.
Don't do telephone farming. You know? Yeah. There's no rich, get rich quick. Scheme in telephone farming.
Telephone farming and farming in general is the long game, right?
Yeah, it's a long game.
It takes time and the learning, there's a steep learning curve as well, isn't it?
If you lease land today,
yes,
that has been used in the past,
yes,
it might take you 2 to 3 years to just correct the soil, to just bring the soil back to what it should be to give you a decent yield.
Yeah.
Farmers don't think about this.
Yes, yes, yes. Because we don't normally. So what are the things that, of the successful farmers that you've mentioned, that you've seen, what are some of the things that they have done? You said they spend more time than people who are not successful. So the amount of time spent. But is there a certain way? Let's pick a crop, for example. If I wanted to be a successful tomato farmer, telephone farmer, what are the steps that I should do? If you can outline them for me.
I think number one is because, as I said, the success, the most critical factor, whether you succeed or not, is whether you can sell the product.
Okay. So I can sell tomatoes, I presume.
So if you can sell the product, because that's the most important thing. If you have the market, then it is basically then growing gradually.
Okay.
We found that telephone farmers who didn't start large.
Yeah. So start small.
Start small and learn. There's a learning curve.
Yeah.
And telephone farmers who didn't assume that, they don't have to learn how to grow tomatoes. I have a manager.
Yeah.
Why do I need to learn those technical things? Yeah. I have an agronomist.
Yes.
We found those kind of telephone farmers won't go anywhere.
Okay. So that's most of us.
They need to learn.
Yeah. So I need to know how to grow a tomato, even though I'm not.
Yes, yes, yes. Today I am doing mentoring and coaching to a lot of telephone farmers.
Yeah.
I won't engage with you if you're not interested in
the process.
You have to know.
Yeah.
You have to know the real details of it.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the time, then you are in the wrong place. So we found that telephone farmers who really spend time, even though they have a technical guy, they have a manager there, but they are spending time to know how tomato grows. What are the key challenges of tomatoes? And so that they can actually guide and also monitor and manage their people.
Yeah.
A lot of telephone farmers, the bulk of them, wanted to sit back.
We delegate. We leave it to other people.
If there's a problem, pump in more money.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that
way. Well, we're told that if we have problems, throw money at it.
Throw money and more people.
Yeah.
That's what we saw. Yeah. They're throwing more money and more people into it.
Yeah.
And they never want to actually go to the farm and understand. So they visit once on a weekend.
Yeah. Oh, a month, once a month.
Once a month.
And you take your friends, and you look at what I'm doing. Yeah. And the reality is that things are not going well.
You have to get to know the business.
How important is mentorship and access to networks in this whole process?
I think if you travel to a place like Netherlands and you see how farmers talk to each other and how many groups farmers form to help each other, you'll understand the role of mentorship and the role of seeing what other people are doing, asking people what has worked.
Yeah.
The longer you stay in farm, you developed the capacity to see what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And if you are new to the farming, it would be nice if you talk to others who already know what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
It would really cut your learning curve and reduce the mistakes.
And so what do you see us doing here? What do telephone farmers do here? Do we just stick it out? We do it, go it alone? Or?
It's almost like a secret. It's almost like I want to do it, succeed, and then surprise everyone. Invite everybody to the village to see the success. People don't want to talk about it. People don't want to ask for help.
Yeah.
And again, those who are succeeding also don't want to give the information.
Yeah.
But across the board, and I've traveled across the globe to see farmers in many parts of the world, successful farmers like to share.
Sharing.
And the new farmers need to find successful ones so that they can learn, to cut the learning curve so that you don't do the same mistakes
that others
have done. So you do new ones, but not the same ones.
Not the same ones. Yeah. Discover your own mistakes.
Discover your own, yeah.
How about you, Peter? You've been a farmer. You said part of your journey has been farming.
Yeah.
Have you lost and made money in farming?
Yes, I have. I have, as a grower myself, as a business person myself.
Grower, as a grower, who was growing as a business.
I have lost a lot of money. Actually, we learn through trial and error.
That's
and
right.
A lot of times it's errors.
Yeah.
And I've lost probably much more than I made.
Yeah.
But the most important thing for the biggest thing that I still think made me lose was... Not because I didn't have the technical, because I had all the technical.
For me, the
biggest challenge has been, like most people, getting early enough, the product market fit.
Yeah.
This has been my biggest weakness. Okay. I couldn't always produce what the market wanted.
Yeah.
I always got into this temptation of produce and then look for the market.
Yeah.
And this is the biggest killer for farming.
Yeah.
Farmers too have to bring to the market what the market wants.
How do we know what the market wants?
And this is where now we have to really invest our time in, just before we even start doing things, to really first of all understand. It's not very difficult to understand what the market wants. Before you jump into it, when people ask me, I have the resources, I have the land, I have the money, when can I start farming? I say, take 9 months.
From the time I want to start?
From the time you are talking to me now, don't do anything for 9 months. Just go to Marikiti, just go to all the markets, just go to the online, just first of all understand, what does the market want? If you are getting into export, I'm involved in export. Right now I'm exporting herbs and vegetables and other stuff.
Yeah.
Before you get into that, understand how the market works and what are the challenges, what does the market really want? Because the market, as I said the other day, it's not obliged to buy what you produce.
Yes.
The market will only buy what they want.
Yeah. The market dictates everything.
It's
But that 9 months is a long time to keep money. but there's a learning.
It's not necessarily 9 months. It's like telling you need time.
Yeah. And what you're saying, that period is just don't jump into it. Don't start planting tomorrow.
Yeah, don't just start planting.
Okay. And what advice would you give? That's what some of the advice you'd give to somebody who's starting out.
Yeah.
Take time to understand it.
Yeah.
Get personal knowledge about the crop that you want to grow.
Yeah.
And the market is literally that. Go to the city market, talk to people who buy, go to the supermarket. Is that how you determine what the market wants?
Yes. And talking to other farmers.
But the market fluctuates, and it fluctuates wildly.
And that's, you need to factor in that in your business.
Yes.
So that you know how the market fluctuates and you develop strategies on how you'll be dealing with those fluctuations.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I want now, as we're coming to the conclusion of this talk, I would like to ask a little bit about some of the things you're doing. So you're an exporter. You've told us about a little bit about export. I just want to touch a little bit more about it. It's we are afraid of export because we're selling to a market we don't know. You know, here I can go to a city market, find out the prices. How do I get links to export a crop? How do I determine what to grow and links to export? Who gives that kind of advice?
So the biggest challenge for export is that you need some volume.
Yes.
So that it makes sense for you to interact with the market and even, for example, to travel and see how the market operates.
Yes.
But again, asking other small exporters, the majority of exporters are small exporters. Yeah. You have a couple of big ones, but who control maybe 60, 70% of the market, but there are so many small exporters.
And does somebody aggregate these exporters or do they export individually?
They export individually.
Okay.
And more people are starting to aggregate.
Okay.
One of the reasons why I formed PEMU was to develop a platform where people could ask these questions.
Yeah.
And PEMU is also aggregating experts and other exporters who are willing to share information.
Okay.
I am a strong believer in sharing information.
I'm
finding a lot more of other leaders in the industry, even including exporters, even big ones who are saying, I don't mind jumping into a platform to explain to new people what they need to do when they get into exports.
Tell us a little bit more about PEMU. PEMU is it's your thing. Yeah. You said you went back into education and you started this academy. So Latia still continues, but you're not so much involved in it.
Yeah.
That was a pioneer, TVET.
Yeah.
But PEMU, what is PEMU? What is the difference? And what are you doing for farmers or in farming?
So I didn't want to set up another TVET because I already have set up a TVET called Latia. So I wanted to set up a platform whereby real issues can be discussed with the real people.
Mm-hmm.
So PEMU is an education platform.
Okay.
And we don't have fixed mindset on what topics all things we will deal with. We let people come to us and we understand the context, their problems, and we try to find solution. One of the things I can do very well and we can do at PEMU is because we have very large networks locally and even internationally, is to be able to help somebody find the help they want.
Okay.
If they want to become exporters, if they want to become domestic suppliers, we have a large expertise and experience of knowing what will work and what works and what doesn't work.
Okay.
So we are mainly focusing on mentorship and coaching and training, but also facilitating management. So facilitating people to find people who can actually run projects for them.
So you can you do the whole complement? If I have a farm and I want to, and I don't even know what to grow, can you run it for me effectively at PEMU?
Only if you're willing to take over from us.
Yes.
Because we, as I said, PEMU is not a management company. It's not a farm management company.
Okay.
We are willing to run the farm for you for a couple of months to teach you.
Okay.
If you're not going to be involved,
if
you never ever want to get involved, then PEMU will not get involved. We are not interested in somebody who says, can I give you the money? Can I give you the land and you manage the farm for me?
Yeah.
No, that's not our customer.
And there are people who do that.
Yeah, and there are many people who want to do that. There are so many people I tell no. I want somebody who says, can you hold my hand for the next 6 months with your team?
Yeah.
And after that, can you let me run?
Okay.
Those are the kind of farmers that I'm really interested in.
And have you started that? Is it
working? We already are running about 4 farms now.
Okay.
All of them in export business.
Yeah, and are they telephone farmers?
They are all telephone farmers.
Okay,
but getting more and more involved.
Yes,
in the business.
Okay,
we're also running our own outgrower program.
Yeah,
just to see how can we translate what we are doing with the mid-sized farmers with the small farmers. You know, the 1 and 2 acre farmers.
Yes,
can they also benefit from mentorship, and from management,
access to networks,
from access to networks?
Okay,
What
is your vision of PEMU in the next 5 years?
I want to create it as a platform where people feel free to come and ask questions.
Okay.
And I see it as a place where you can come and ask questions and get support and get answers to the questions that you have.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't have ambitions of growing into thousands, going into 10, 15 countries.
No.
We just want to be, if we work with 100 farmers, we want those farmers to succeed.
Yeah. Kenya is challenging enough or big enough for what you are.
Not just Kenya.
Yeah.
My county, Murang'a alone, is enough challenge for PEMU.
Okay. So before I wrap up, I'd like to hear about some of the personal influences and resources that have shaped your journey. you know, maybe books you've read, what books you've read that have helped you in this journey, or people who you've encountered as a mentor?
I think, without mentioning specific names, but I have been mentored.
Well, maybe of the books you can mention.
I think probably one of the people who have received more mentorship.
Yeah.
And starting with my first employers at Homegrown, fantastic place to learn.
Okay.
Most of the leaders in the industry today in the fresh produce have guided me, have given me opportunities to learn.
Yeah.
But for the telephone farmers, what I would like to say is that it's not different from any business.
Yeah.
So please learn as much as you can about the business you're getting into.
Yes.
If you're getting into poultry, please learn everything you can.
And the knowledge is available, right?
Yeah, and that's what I want to that's what I actually want to facilitate. Come and tell me I want to learn about avocado.
Yes.
Before you start, before you put any money, we show you how this can be done.
Yeah.
So secondly, telephone farming usually starts as a small business.
Yes.
So I would encourage them to read this book called The Company of One.
The Company of One.
Okay. This is a very important book.
By Paul Jarvis.
By Paul Jarvis.
Okay.
I read it like a textbook. I read it over and over again.
And is it about farming or is it about solopreneurship?
Solopreneurship.
Okay.
Telephone farming is about solopreneurship.
Solopreneurship, yes.
And you understand what are the challenges, what are the nightmares you are going to have, and how do you make a good business?
Yes.
Eventually, it can grow into a corporate.
Exactly.
But usually, it always starts as a business of one.
Okay.
And so, there is a lot. There is a big difference between how I ran FarmWorks when we started FarmWorks in 2020 and I was ahead.
Yes.
It's very different from the way I'm running PEMU, which PEMU is a much smaller business that started as a business of one.
Okay.
And FarmWorks was a corporate from the beginning that is still going to be a corporate. So it's a very big difference.
Okay.
The second thing that I would like to encourage is learn as much as possible about the market.
Yeah.
The market is everything. If you don't have the market, you are not. And I like this book from
Seth Godin. It's called This Is Marketing.
This Is Marketing.
Okay.
Again, this is almost a textbook for me.
Yes.
And the more you can read about it, the more he simplifies it in such a way that it is so easy for you to understand what marketing is.
Yes.
So if you know how to set up a business of one and how to do marketing, you have a much better chance of succeeding as a telephone farmer. But take time. Don't rush into anything.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, Peter, I want to thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you very much on your insights.
Thank you.
I think you've given us the fundamentals about telephone farming. You've discussed the challenges. And what I like most is that you've given us steps in which we can mitigate these losses that we incur as telephone farmers and how we can become more successful as telephone farmers. I like what you've said, that we must learn about the crops we want to invest in, that we must take time to go to our investments, go and get integrate, build a team, manage the team. They must see us there. We must be present. You've also said that we must take time to understand the market. I like what you said. We might have the land, we might have the money, we might have everything, but don't just jump into it. Take time and understand it. Access to networks, mentorship, those are very important things that you've mentioned. But what I also like is that you have set up an institution that is ready and willing to help us telephone farmers, smallholder and mid-sized farmers to get the necessary support in helping us source the resource persons, to understand the crops. And I think that we will share all this information so that we'll make PEMU accessible to our listeners who want to venture into farming or who already in farming are stuck or who want to enhance what they're doing. So with that, thank you so much, Peter, and wish you every success.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And keep holding our hand as we continue in this journey.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, listeners. We've come to the end of our show. And we look forward to the next show where we'll continue to discuss things around farming, telephone farming, and other aspects of farming. This is The Accidental Farmer, a podcast that gives you the real dirt on farming.